Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Elogi. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so it is April 13th, 2024. Amongst other things that have happened this week, one of our most notorious murderers has finally kicked the bucket. And he was also, like, in his former life, he was also, like, a football star and a sometimes actor, but let's be honest, nobody remembers him for that shit anymore. But we'll be talking about that and we're going to talk a little bit about just the sheer, like, cultural chokehold that man in his trial had for pretty much everybody in the United States as it was happening. Because me and Chris, we both grew up while that was happening, and it was everywhere. It was inescapable in ways that are honestly kind of hard to comprehend today. But obviously, we got some other stuff to talk about. We got some political shenanigans afoot. Women's basketball, specifically the NCAA, their championship is doing really good ratings. There's another TMNT movie coming. We got a bunch of entertainment-related stuff, including some trailers and some releases to talk about. And, of course, we've also got, more bullshit from Boeing, because they've apparently become the new, main character of bullshit for this year. So, with that, however, we're going to go ahead and start off the show. And as always, as we start off the show, we start off about all the things we've been doing this week up until this point in time. And as is always tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Enjoying the lovely weather of constant rain, as is how our, I don't know about spring, but it's kind of that, I guess, that we get here. So that's been fun. Today's the first day in probably like 5 days that we didn't have any rain.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. But managed to kind of get away and do some stuff. Went and saw the new Godzilla movie.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. Very dumb for what it is, which is not too surprising.
Yeah.
Godzilla X Kong, or Godzilla Cross Kong, the new Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So the second in that sub series.
Ah.
Because there's one Kong movie, then there was a Godzilla movie, then they made another Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
And the two of them teamed up, and then they teamed up again.
Yep.
And so, you got five of these MonsterVerse movies and some other stuff that's going on there. But pretty fun time. This one is basically about Kong having depression because he's a social creature who is the last of his kind, as far as he knows. But learns of there being potentially others, and that escalates into a whole big climax at the end of the big fight. And that's a pretty good time. Godzilla's doing his thing. He's basically powering up for some battle he senses is coming. Mm-hmm. And essentially gets a nice power-up attack from what the writer on the movie was like likening it to Goku getting his Kaioken attack.
Mm-hmm.
Kaioken, that's sort of a temporary power up that increases their power and all that. So, the big villain is not really anybody too amazing or noteworthy, but they have a really cool weapon that is some pretty badass shit, but with Kong and Godzilla's mites, they figure out how to stop it and do all that. So, Godzilla suplexes a monster near the pyramids in Cairo, Egypt. So, that's as good as you can hope for. So there you go for that. Not really been doing too much else from watching stuff,
mm-hmm.
but, been playing some things. Play more Ayuden Chronicle Rising. Played a couple more hours of that, and that's still been a fun time. As now I've gotten the ability to put the elemental stuff on all three characters, so now I can do all that, though I need stuff to get elemental stuff for the... Because I still have a bunch of the like pillars that you have to break with elemental things that I don't have the things for that, so still got to keep pushing through for all that, but still liking it a lot. And then the other like game I've been playing some Resistance Retribution on PS5. That's one of the PSP games Sony's put out. Which still holds up pretty well. That is the Resistance game that came out after Resistance 2. It kind of links up with that game in some really interesting ways, where I think Sony was trying to do some means of linking up a PSP and a PS3 to do some opening up stuff. So by default, it has the PS Plus feature unlocked from the start, which is where you would connect your PSP to the PS3 and you would be able to use the DualShock 3 to play the game on your PSP, which means they turn off like the auto-aiming stuff and, you know, that kind of stuff, and allow you to use, you know, the both shoulder buttons and all that. So it's a little bit tougher as a result because you don't get auto-aiming for it, but it's a third-person cover-based shooter in the vein of, you know, an Uncharted or Gears of War, instead of a first-person shooter like the first two games were. And then they just added an update to Infected mode, which was when you linked it up with a copy of Resistance 2 that added this new mode where you could replay the campaign. And the main character has these weird red eyes that's in 4K. Definitely stands out as like, oh, this wasn't meant to be blown up this much to be played on anything more than like a 4-inch screen. Because the blinking eyes don't work right. And it's like, because it was made for a small screen that did not display in 4K for everybody to see every little imperfection there. But you see that, and then your guy is more of a jerk and people aren't super nice to you, even for as much as they aren't in that game, in the main campaign. But you also get a special weapon. It's basically a pistol that shoots essentially like an explosive that you can then remote detonate, which can be nice for certain types of enemies. That's a cool thing they added. They added a few new trophies just for that mode. Some extra value for that. And I guess the other one I was playing is Jack and Daxter, The Lost Frontier, which is the fourth Jack and Daxter game. Made by the team that did the Ratchet and Clank PSP game and Secret Agent Clank on the PSP. This is probably the worst of those three games. It's not bad, but it's definitely like a product of its era. Because it's a 3D platformer with some other stuff going on in there. But it doesn't have like a fully 3D camera control. It's a PSP game, so it's trying to direct you as much as possible. And there's plenty of times where I'm kind of fighting with the camera in that. But it's also very slow to start because it's, you know, trying to introduce story stuff in there and all that. You do a bit of aerial combat stuff in a ship, which works out pretty well, at least the first time. The second time you're doing this chase where they constantly have like lava rocks shooting up in the air that are real hard to dodge, all that kind of stuff. So that stuff's all right. But you have to go through like a good hour intro of story stuff before you really get to the point where you kind of start with nothing and have to work your way back up. So yeah, that one's the lesser of these two, but they both came out the same year in 2009. So they're both 15 years old this year. So, but that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, I am actually just about finished with Dragon's Dogma 2, at least the main campaign stuff. Although I've been told that apparently there's like a whole like other half of the game, depending on what ending you end up getting with what happens when you confront the dragon. So I'm going to find out what that is when I get there, but I've just been kind of preparing before then because, you know, it's like it's the dragon. He's supposed to be big and hardy. And I'll be completely honest, I finally managed to kill some of the drakes, you know, the lesser dragons this week. And they were no picnic. They were all very difficult to kill. They require, and the thing is, there's not just like one type of lesser drake. There's like two of them. You've got like the standard one that does like a, you know, fire, you know, breathe fire, rawr, you know, that kind of thing. But you got this other one, which is these infected lesser dragons that have like these pustules growing on them. And when they end up like getting to a point where they want to like, where they've been sufficiently damaged, but they get to this point where they open up their chest cavity and they start spewing out this gross, like acidic substance that not only like drains away all your stamina, it also like drains your life meter down to the point where you can't even effectively recover any energy using items because the injuries are too grave. And yeah, it's not easy, but I finally managed to pull it off just through sheer force of will, more or less. So yeah, I'm excited to see where this ends up going, because the game's been suggesting that there's some like weird subterfuge going on underneath the surface, and I'm kind of interested in seeing where that goes. But anyway, so on top of that, I was looking for something else to play, and I had heard that, I don't know if you remember that game Ion Fury.
Oh yeah, that homophobic game.
Yeah, okay, so it was a boomer shooter. It was by 3D Realms. So the game was actually on sale on PSN, and I was like, okay, you know, I want to play a boomer shooter, and, you know, in spite of everything, I do like 3D Realms and their stuff, but I want to, I'm like, can I buy this and do this without any guilt? And I looked it up, and apparently 3D Realms has dummied out all the awful homophobic shit and all the other awful shit. So that stuff's no longer in the game, and the people that did it were fired. So it was only $6. I was like, screw it, whatever. And like, you've played boomer shooters before, right? I don't know why we call them boomer shooters, because I'm pretty sure there weren't any boomers. Well, there were very few boomers who played these games back in the day. Yeah, it's dumb. It's a dumb name for, you know, old school FPS before Half-Life, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, Wolfenstein, Quake, Doom, and they're like 80 zillion, you know, Marathon, Hexen, all those types of games. And of course the Duke Nukem 3D, which for all how trashy it was, that game actually, like, as I'll tell people who've never played the original Duke Nukem 3D, because it wasn't the first Duke Nukem game. The original Duke Nukem games were actually platformers, believe it or not. But the original Duke Nukem 3D is, in spite of all the trashiness that it was known for, it was actually one of the surprisingly most interactive FPS games that had come out to that point, which is one of the reasons why it was a big deal back in the day. Same thing with Shadow Warrior, even though that one was also insanely racist by modern standards. But anyway, so Ion Fury, it's basically Duke Nukem if she was a woman cop, and that's about it. It's definitely not anywhere near as trashy as Duke Nukem is. It's got a lot of jokes in it, but most of it is a lot more low-key than Duke Nukem was. Duke Nukem was obnoxious. Ion Fury is a lot more, a lot less so. Even though it's still got its bits, because, I mean, she's constantly doing her little quips and everything, which is 100% a Duke Nukem, you know, trait. And, also like the original Duke Nukem 3D, it is really difficult to navigate some of these environments because, there is a lot to be said about how supposedly games have been getting progressively easier over the years. But there's also a lot to be said about the fact that part of the reason that's happened is because some of those older games were just an absolute nightmare to have to navigate, especially when you're like taking place in like a vaguely sort of cyberpunkish futuristic metropolis, and yet so much looks all samey and everything. Like the whole thing with the Ion Fury's overall like game cycle, its whole like, the way the game plays, is it's that old thing with like old school FPS games. You remember how this went. You're in an area, you need to get to a door. The door needs a key card. You need to get the key card. Key card has to be a specific color. You get the key card, you go into the door. There's another door. Rinse and repeat. You know how this goes. That's Ion Fury to a T. It is essential. It is very much that. I will say, for the record, I am having fun with the game because, there is something to be said about old school, shooter mechanics, is that a lot of them do work really well. I mean, people still play Doom all these years later, and it's because the basic formula works so well. Same here. But there are definitely parts where it's like, yeah, the genre has evolved for a reason. Let's put it that way. So Phantom Fury, for those who don't know, that's the sequel to Ion Fury that's supposed to be coming out soon. Supposed to come out this year. I don't know when. I think supposedly it's supposed to come out later this month. I'm really not sure if that's what's going to happen because apparently there was a demo that came out a while back and it was an absolute dumpster fire. So I don't know, maybe it'll work. I guess we'll see. But yeah, that's Ion Fury. It's all right. If you like, difficult boomer shooters of that type, it's all right. It's all right. And on top of everything else, I've been watching Fallout on Amazon Prime. And if you're a Fallout fan, you're going to love this. Despite, what parts of the internet may try to suggest, because this game is the show is legitimately faithful to not just the Fallout lore, but also the whole Fallout atmosphere. The whole thing about Fallout games is that you're basically just dicking around in the desert, and that's a big, sizable chunk of what this show is. It basically opens more or less like all of the Fallout. Well, not all of the Fallout games. Some of them don't open this way, but most of the Fallout games open with. The show actually opens on the day that the bombs drop. And we're watching at this guy who is a film and television actor who is, for some other reason, he's doing like children's birthday parties. Apparently it's got something to do with like alimony or whatever, or at least that's the quip that's made. It's, if you played Fallout 4 and you remember that whole segment where it's like, it's the day the bombs drop and there's like a bunch of things like the television, the news. That's how this opens. And then the bombs drop and this guy, he picks up his daughter and they get on their horse and, head for the hills and everything. And then the show picks up about 219 years later in Vault 33, where this girl named Lucy, she is making an application for the Vault's triannual sort of vault trading program, where they'll occasionally trade members that are of good standing for breeding purposes, more or less. Because remember, the thing about being in a vault is because you've got a limited gene pool there, it can be an issue trying to keep the population going without dealing with inbreeding and the defects that come from that. What happens is that the people who are supposedly for the Vault, because the whole thing is she's basically like arranged to be married with another guy from, I think it's supposed to be, if I remember correctly, it's Vault 32, that they're like connected with via tunnel. What happens is the one of her little brother, basically, while they're having like the post-wedding reception and everything is happening, he decides to wander into Vault 32, and he discovers that all their crops have been dead for a while, and so have most of the people. And then as he's coming back, it turns out the man she's marrying, turns out they're all raiders, and they basically massacre a bunch of the people in the vault, and end up kidnapping her father, who is the vault overseer. And so she basically decides to just leave the vault and go searching for him. So like that's one of the story arcs. There's another story arc involving this guy named Maximus, who is a novice for the Brotherhood of Steel, who is trying to become anointed as a squire for one of the major knights there, and he ends up getting, there's some drama about him getting overlooked and everything, but ultimately, because I don't want to spoil a whole lot of it, he ends up becoming a squire for his knight. They end up going out into the wasteland. And then there's a third individual who is a ghoul. And if you're not familiar with Fallout terminology or Fallout lore, ghouls are basically people who, well, there's a bunch of different ghouls out there, but basically a ghoul is an individual who is exposed to so much radiation that it doesn't kill them. In fact, it basically kicks up their metabolic process to the point that they're effectively immortal. But the trade-off is that, for one thing, their skin basically starts rotting off of them, like, you know, your typical zombies, and unless they stay stocked with a certain variety of chemicals that they have to use regularly, they eventually go feral, where they basically end up turning into the traditional zombie. This guy is basically a bounty hunter who is very cowboy-esque in his ways. And he's, finds out that there's this bounty for, this scientist who has apparently escaped the Enclave, which, for those who don't know what the Enclave is, that's basically the remainders of the old military industrial complex before the war started that wants to remake, the post-apocalyptic world in their image. And this guy has not only stolen some Enclave technology, he has also made off with one of their dogs that they used for animal testing. And that's basically how the story goes. I'm about halfway through it, and I'm definitely loving what I'm watching so far. It is very, very true to lore, to, you know, the related lore. There's been people who've been saying, oh my God, they retcon this and that. They didn't really retcon anything. Those are people who didn't watch the whole show and pay attention, but it's a great show. Highly recommend it. And, really other than that, just dealing with the Apollonocalypse part 3, the reckoning, because yeah, I was out there walking today, and I kept getting cloud dusted with the stuff, you know, crop dusted. But you know, that's spring for you, just getting splattered with it just everywhere you go. Thank God for stuff like Mucinex and whatever, because I couldn't survive without it. But yeah, so do you have anything else you want to add before we move on, Chris?
Nope.
Alrighty then. Well then, it is now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And because the subject of this factoid passed away this week, I decided, you know what, we're just going to sort of dedicate this particular part of the show to that man's, who he was, his trial, why he was such a big deal, why that trial became such a big deal, and just how it was that the city of Los Angeles managed to bungle what should have been an open and shut case. So Chris, do you remember hearing about the OJ trial when you were growing up?
Yeah, the fervor around it. I didn't really understand anything else about it.
Yeah, we didn't really either. I mean, same for me. I mean, we knew sort of like the basics. There was this dude, he killed his wife and her I'm pretty sure he was going to be her fiance, because this was her his ex-wife that he had killed. And then I remember, like, some years later when I started seeing him popping up in, like, old movies and everything, because I was like, oh, so he was an actor. He's like, no, he was an athlete. He was like, okay, but I'm seeing him on this. He's like, well, he also had kind of an acting career as well. If you ever watch the old Naked Gun movies, yeah, he's in all three of them as Nordberg. But yeah, Orenthal James Simpson. Who was he? Why was he a big deal? Why was his trial a big deal? Well, the first thing you need to know about OJ was he was a football player before he was anything else, and he wasn't just a minor one. He was legit a good one. You could argue he was one of the greats. He was an MVP. He won the Heisman Trophy. He held the record for. Well, he held a couple of different records, but he held he became the first NFL player to rush for more than 2,000 yards in a season. He's the only NFL player to have done so in a 14-game regular season, and he holds the record for the single season's yard per game average at 143.1. So, you know, it's not like he was a minor. The dude was a major player. He did like 9 seasons originally with the Buffalo Bills that he was originally with, and then I think at some point he moved over to the San Francisco 49ers, and then he retired from the game in 79. Then after that, obviously, like
you
I said,
89?
Yeah, it might have been 89.
I was gonna say, I don't think he really played much in the 70s.
Well, yeah, like college. I mean, like 1979. Yeah, well, it might have been. But yeah, and after that, he started acting in film and television. He was a sports broadcaster. You know, he showed up at sports shows. And now he was also a spokesman for like a bunch of products and companies as well. Famously, he was a spokesman for Hertz, something that they still regret all these years later. And he's also he was also put into a bunch of halls of fame, football. But pretty much all that stuff is what very little of what anybody remembers of him. His murder trial is what people remember, and that's sort of what we're going to go over. So the victims of that murder was his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson. Although were they technically still married or separated, or had they divorced by that point? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Let me see. Okay. Yeah, so like he had met her back in, I think it was 1977 when he was 30 and she was 18, working at a waitress at the Daisies, which was like a private club in Beverly Hills. They married in 85. They had 2 kids. They apparently, and just to show you off, just right off the bat, that shit was probably going to get bad. She did not work while they were married because she had signed a prenup agreement with him that explicitly forbid her from doing so. Then it eventually came out that apparently it wasn't just that. Apparently he was an abuser, a textbook example of domestic abuse. Something that she was apparently reluctant to tell the cops about because she was financially dependent on him, which again, remember the prenup? Now you know, it wasn't just verbal. He apparently broke her arm once. He beat her in public. He beat her during sex. There were like 62 known incidents of abuse between them. With the U.S. being, with the cops being called 8 times, Simpson himself was actually arrested once for this. Then in 92, Brown finally filed for divorce. So I guess, yeah, they were either divorced or in the process. Yeah, they were already divorced. And after that, Brown then did Brown said Simpson did exactly what you think an abusive individual usually does. He started stalking her. She documented the incident when she spied on her having sex with her new boyfriend. Afterwards, she said she felt her life was in danger because he had threatened to kill her if he ever found her with another man. Spoiler alert, he did. She drafted a will. She apparently telephoned a woman's shelter in 94. He was in the process of, and now Simpson himself, while this was all happening, he was in the process of, well, two things. He was wrapping up the third Naked Gun movie, which was Naked Gun 3.5, The Final Insult, I believe. And he had also done work on a TV pilot called Frogmen. During that time, he claimed that he had received a fair amount of military training, including, most importantly, the use of a knife. So that sort of sets up to the actual murders. And those happened June 12th, 1994. Brown and Simpson both attended their daughter Sydney's dance recital. Afterward, Brown went to eat at a restaurant, and her family went to eat at a restaurant, didn't invite OJ for very obvious reasons. One of the guys at the restaurant, one of the waiters, was a guy named Ron Goldman, who had become close friends with Brown in recent weeks. There have been thoughts that at this point, her and Goldman were family friends. Maybe they were starting to develop into something else. Then after that, Brown and her kids went to Ben and Jerry's. Then they went back to their condo in Brentwood. While that was happening, Simpson himself was eating at a McDonald's with Cato Kalin, who was a bit part actor and a friend of the family. Kalin is kind of a weird in that he was a bit part actor. He weirdly only became really famous because of this trial. He became America's most notorious house guest. And he had been living on the Simpsons estate for a while. Ultimately, what ends up happening is that Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman were both found dead in their house, beheaded. Or at least through attempted beheading. Nicole had apparently had her neck slashed really badly that her larynx could be seen through the wound in her neck. Brown, on the other hand, had his head just barely remained attached to his body. So after that happened, O.J. Simpson did what every very, very innocent person does in a case of a murder. He went through a whole bunch of money, got a fake mustache and sunglasses and a knife and a gun, and he climbed into a friend of his white Ford Bronco, where he then led the police on a slow motion chase down a Los Angeles highway. Yeah, I remember that white Ford Bronco became the butt of so many jokes when I was a kid. But because you have to remember, one of the things about all of this you kind of have to remember is that this had all happened about 2 years after the Los Angeles riots. And that's going to get into play in a little bit because of how badly they end up bungling this trial. Among other things, one of the things about what would happen when after Simpson was arrested and arraigned and put into custody and all this stuff, the Los Angeles Police Department put in a bunch of ordered a quartet of detectives, Tom Lang, Philip Vanifter, Ron Phillips, and probably the guy that's going to end up being the most fateful of them, a gentleman by the name of Mark Furman, to notify Simpson of Nicole Brown's death and to escort him to the police station to pick up the former couple's children who were asleep in Brown's condominium at the time. He was, then led them on the case. And then, basically what happened is OJ basically got all the money he could get together. He ended up hiring what would end up becoming his dream team. The quote unquote dream team some of these names you might recognize because some of them ended up managing to become either infamous in their own right or use this to branch off into like a whole career. Robert Shapiro. Johnny Cochran. Yeah, Johnny Cochran. This is where he became famous. Carl Douglas, Sean Chapman Holly, Gerald Uhlman, Robert Kardashian. Yes, Kardashian of that family. Alan Dershowitz. Yes, that Alan Dershowitz. Effie Bailey, Barry Schecht, Peter Newfield, Robert Blasier, and William Thompson. So of these individuals, Shapiro joined the defense team 1 week after the beginning of the trial. He was called the architect of the Simpson defense for building the quote-unquote dream team that would come. He ended up becoming the co-founder of RightCounsel.com. He also co-founded LegalZoom. Then, of course, there's Johnny Cochran. Again, he was known for, if you ever watched like old South Park, you may remember that one episode where he gives the quote-unquote Chewbacca defense. So Johnny Cochran never actually gave anything like that, but it was meant to be a sort of parody of what his presenting style was. He famously made this whole thing around this glove, this bloody glove that had been found at the Simpsons residence that was apparently belonged to OJ. And there was this whole thing where he tried to get OJ to put on the gloves, and OJ made this huge show of showing that the gloves were supposed to be too small. They weren't, for the record. They clearly fit him, but he managed to do it in just such a way that he made it so like his fingers were too large to get in there. And so Cochran famously says, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. He died in 2005, for anybody's clueless. Robert Kardashian, you know the Kardashian family, and he was part of them. Alan Dershowitz, he is a professor emeritus at Harvard Law. He ended up representing later on Julian Assange, Jeffrey Epstein, and Harvey Weinstein. He also served as a member of the legal team for, of course, former President Donald J. Trump during his first impeachment trial. He also, of course, ended up being heavily implicated in the crimes of Jeffrey Epstein. But obviously, that's just not the end of just the multitude of oddball personalities that ended up coming up during this trial. For example, there was the judge, Lance Ito, who became basically starstruck by the trial and famously read people's birthdays on camera during the trial. And then, of course, there was Mark Furman, the detective himself, because as it turns out, Mark Furman, on top of being a detective for the Los Angeles Police Department, was also a huge racist. And the dream team of his defense managed to get a significant amount of material out of the fact that this guy was not only a huge racist, but he apparently let his racial bias apparently taint a lot of the cases that he worked for. Then it later turned out that the Los Angeles Police Department had managed to bungle just a bunch of other basic shit involved. And keep in mind, this is all from the fact that this is just alone the DNA and blood evidence that they had. They found Simpson's DNA on blood drops next to the bloody footprints near the victims at the crime scene. They also found him on some blood drops leading away from the crime scene towards and on the back gate, which he used to leave the premises. They also found Simpson's, Goldman, and Brown's DNA on blood on the outside of the door and inside Simpson's Bronco, that famous Bronco we talked about earlier. They also found his DNA on blood drops leading from the area where his Bronco was parked at his Rockingham home to the front door entrance. Simpson, Brown, and Goldman's DNA was also found on that aforementioned bloody glove that was found in behind his house. And they found Simpson and Brown's DNA on blood on a pair of socks in his bedroom. And the prosecution stated the probability of error was 1 in 6.8 billion. And that's just the blood and DNA. It's like this guy might as well have bathed himself in Nicole and Brown and Goldman's blood, you know, written, I did this in blood, signed OJ, and then just drove to his out on his car to his house, just waving blood droplets all over the place. Like there, it's just a trail from one to the other. And it's like, it should have been open and shut. And I'm not even going to get into like the hair and the fiber evidence or the shoe print analysis or any of this stuff. And yet they ended up mishandling a bunch of evidence. They ended up contaminating some of it. They even apparently fudged the timeline somewhat when they were putting it out. And so what ultimately happened is that, and keep in mind, this was also, like I said, in the aftermath of the LA riots, when at the time, the Los Angeles Police Department did not have the best reputation nationwide. So this would have, should have been a point where the LAPD should have been really damn sure that they were crossing their I's and dotting, you know, crossing their T's and dotting their I's, and they somehow managed to fudge even that up.
Yeah, lots of questionable decisions.
Yeah. Ultimately, in October 3rd of 1995, Simpson was found not guilty in violation of Penal Code Section 187, and he was also found not guilty in violation of Penal Code Section 187 for Ronald Goldman as well. So basically, he was acquitted of the murder of both. Now, obviously, this wasn't necessarily the end of it. After the trial, Goldman's family ended up filing a civil suit against him. The jury, in return, unanimously found Simpson responsible for the deaths of both Goldman and Brown. They were awarded compensatory and punitive damages totaling $33.5 million, which is about twice that much in 2023-2024 dollars. They, of course, only received a small amount of the figure because Simpson did everything he possibly could to not pay them. And then in 2000, Simpson left for Florida, and then he ended up dying this week. Well, we'll get to that. And the reason he ended up moving to Florida is because Florida is one of the few states where personal assets, such as homes and pensions, cannot be seized to cover liabilities that are incurred in other states. Of course, this was not the last legal issue he had after this. He was convicted of breaking into another person's home to recover some what he claimed was stolen sports memorabilia that he claimed belonged to him. He ended up getting convicted of that. He ended up going to jail for, I think it was like 10 years or something like that. It happened in 2007. He went to Lovelock Correctional Center in rural Nevada and was paroled in 2017. He was then released from his parole in 2021 and lived in freedom until we'll get to that later. But yeah, so, this trial and everything revolving around it just permeated the media and the popular consciousness in a way that I don't think is even possible today, because we have so many websites and news sources and social media outlets that, you know, for something like this to like become such a major issue and to persist for, you know, well over a year, and just be the topic of just about every single comedy show and talk show and everything else on the planet for months on end. I don't even know if that's necessarily possible today, for something like this. So that was O.J. Simpson, formerly famous athlete and sometime actor, now known to the world as an infamous murderer who managed to get away with it. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And our first assholes of the week are the Supreme Court of Arizona, who allowed an 1864 abortion law from before it even became a state to be enforced that is a near total ban.
Yeah.
And the thing is, apparently, folks in Arizona aren't happy.
Oh, yeah. Even Republicans aren't happy because they have noticed finally that the trend of being virulently anti-abortion is pretty bad for the polls when voting time comes.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got people like Carrie Lake and Trump even trying to be like acting like they weren't supportive of this kind of stuff before. And mm-hmm. people pulled out the receipts for Carrie Lake being like, yo, is this you from, you know, a few months ago?
Yeah.
Fully in support of making this law from, well, you know, 160 years ago, putting that into law. And it's like, yeah, that was her. Mm-hmm. Now she's put out a statement because she's, you know, running for election for a Senate seat that, you know, acting like she's, you know, well against this. And it's like, that's not how that works.
Nope.
So yeah, this since December 2022, Arizona doctors have been allowed to provide abortions up to 15 weeks into pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
based on a lower court's interpretation of state laws. But the state Supreme Court now says Arizona should follow a law banning abortions in almost all cases. It makes no exceptions for rape or incest. Mm-hmm. It makes performing an abortion punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison. And again, this is from 1864, where abortions then mm-hmm. and now are very different things.
Yep.
Yeah, and the ruling justices wrote that they will stay enforcement for 14 days, possibly longer, allowing abortions to continue during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Planned Parenthood Arizona, the state's largest abortion provider, says it plans to continue providing abortions as long as allowed.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the AG has said they don't plan on enforcing the law.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hilarious,
mm-hmm.
For all that. So yeah, this is a hell of a situation to put everybody in, and Republicans are very much not happy.
No.
Which is how you know that it's a very bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the Supreme Court is heavily Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it seems like it shouldn't really be a thing to enforce laws from before a state was a state, when it was a territory.
Yeah.
It seems like that should be like, maybe the things they were into back then should not be mm-hmm. the things they're into now.
Yeah.
Because enough things have changed, and probably the makeup of the state itself has changed a lot.
Well, the borders certainly have. Have you ever seen what the Arizona Territory looked like in 1864? Because half of it was actually Confederate territory.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, but, yeah. Next up, the parents of the Oxford High School shooter were sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both found guilty in separate trials on 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter. Each of those charges carries a maximum penalty of 15 years
mm-hmm.
and are to be served concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they don't specify in this article the specific time that they are serving, because I guess they're probably counting time served from the past 2 years and change they've been in jail waiting for their trials to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably part of it being under 15 years technically, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's and they probably have some outs for parole, I think. But yeah, there's a lot of weirdness to this whole thing, as mm-hmm. they managed to put out a statement during this saying, this is James Crumley, the father. I am sorry for your loss as a result of what my son did. Mm. I can't express how much I wish that I had known what was going on with him or what was going to happen, because I absolutely mm-hmm. would have done a lot of things differently. In her statement, Jennifer Crumley said her husband and her son were an average family.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't perfect, but we loved our son and each other tremendously. This could be any parent up here in my shoes. Ethan could be your child, could be your grandchild, your niece, your nephew, your brother, your sister. Your child could make the fatal decision, not just with a gun, but a knife, a vehicle, intentionally or unintentionally. You know, it's like, I don't know how you get unintentionally with a gun or a knife or mm-hmm. any of that. And yeah, the families weren't exactly happy about these statements they put out,
mm-hmm.
Saying this one. The mother of Madison Baldwin, one of the 4 kids that were killed,
mm-hmm.
Saying, not only did your son kill my daughter, but you both did as well. Mm-hmm. The words involuntary should not be part of your offense. Everything you did that day, months prior, and days after were voluntary acts helping your son to commit a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Not just one, but multiple. And yeah, it's certainly a hell of a case, because this is one of the first times that parents of a mass shooter have been held accountable for their child's actions.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully sets a precedent for future shooters.
Yeah.
Their son, pleaded guilty to murder and previously was sentenced to life without parole for the school shooting he carried out when he was 15.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they're filing an appeal for that. The parents are also filing an appeal, I guess, in the court shortly after they were filling out the paperwork for an appeal. So
mm-hmm.
they'll see if they can get a lighter sentence or whatever. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they don't. They deserve to stay in jail, in a prison for a while.
Yeah. But yeah, and then we got this other issue. So there's this growing issue where a bunch of health insurance brokers are basically making unauthorized policy switches for ACA policyholders. And now it's getting so bad that federal and state regulators are actually considering getting involved.
Yeah. The growing problem of rogue health insurance brokers making unauthorized policy switches for Affordable Care Act policyholders, says consumer agents, nonprofit enrollee assistance groups, and other insurance experts are setting up the warning bells for this. There was an article published by NPR outlining how licensed brokers' easy access to policyholder information on healthcare.gov has led unscrupulous agents to switch people's policies without express permission. Those agents can then take the commission that comes with signing a new customer. Dozens of people and insurance brokers responded to the earlier report recounting similar situations. Some switch policyholders end up in plans that don't include their doctors or their medications they regularly take, or come with higher deductibles than their original coverage choice. Their income or eligibility for premium tax credits is misrepresented. Some people end up owing back taxes. Agents whose clients have been affected say the switches ramped up last year and are continuing into this year. Although quantifying the problem continues to be difficult because it seems concentrated on the federal healthcare.gov website, which is a marketplace where people in 32 states buy ACA plans, which are also known, Obamacare, if you don't remember.
Yeah.
They declined to provide the number of complaints that have been filed so far. During a December committee meeting of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, that they were acutely aware of the problem and working on solutions. So this seems like a weird part of the website that people, shady people, have become aware of and are using it to get some of that money that they're not supposed to be getting. So hopefully they fix this, because it's really fucked up to change a lot of these people's healthcare plans and leave them to deal with all the bullshit that comes with that. So yeah, that's a whole thing. You can read all this for even more details, but yeah, it's very fucked up that this is happening.
And then guess what? Boeing is in trouble again. A Southwest Boeing plane flying to Houston lost its engine cover and had to return to Denver, which means there's going to be yet another FAA investigation. And on top of that, there's a whistleblower that came out that alleged that Boeing routinely ignored complaints about issues in the manufacturing process.
Yeah, very fun time.
The
engine cover fell off during flight, struck the wing flap. They have recorded air traffic control audio. One of the pilots said that several passengers and flight attendants heard something loud hit the wing, which is typically what you don't want to have to happen when you're just starting your flight. Southwest said passengers would take another plane to Houston would be approximately 3 hours behind schedule as a result of the delay here. But yeah, the Southwest said its maintenance teams would review the aircraft, which departed at 7:49 a.m. local time, returned at 8:15 a.m., so not even 30 minutes. The flight reached an altitude of about 10,000 feet. It was deemed airworthy in May 2015 per FAA records. But yeah, I assume that they don't get inspected as much as they really should be.
Yeah.
Especially with the recent stuff happening, it seems like the entire fleet that every airline has should be getting fully reinspected before being put back into circulation. Even if that causes delays in flights and all that. I think people would rather have the peace of mind than worrying about all the missing their flights or whatever. But yeah, the whistleblower thing, that's a whole thing. Yeah, they're accused of routinely ignoring a whistleblower's complaints about the allegedly critically flawed manufacturing process for its 787 Dreamliner planes. They claim Boeing retaliated against him and put him on the 777 unit as punishment.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he says he found even more production problems.
Mm.
So that's a good time there. Say, well, if you find so many problems with this one, here's another one. Mm. It's punishment. And he's like, oh, there's even more here. This is all fucked up. Boeing strongly denies the claims and says it's confident in the safety of its aircraft, which is a hilarious thing to say from the past, like 6 months of shit just falling off of their planes. That's the thing that should be investigated fully.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, yep. There you go.
Yeah. But it's fortunately not all terrible. We also have Heroes of the Week. And this one is like prime for, somebody's getting a movie deal. Three men were stranded on a Pacific island for nearly a week before being rescued after their giant help sign on the shore was spotted. Yeah, you know how it's always in the movies where they make like an enormous help me sign on the shore if somebody's ever trapped on an island. Yeah, they actually did that and it worked.
Yeah, the big trope of these island stranding, or movies, using rocks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
These three men, all in their 40s, left Easter Sunday on a 20-foot skiff from Palawat to Pikelot. Mm-hmm. Both places are two small Pacific islands that make up the Micronesia archipelago. So not too big of a place to search, but a woman called the Coast Guard to report that her uncles did not return, which about 100 nautical miles from where they began. So the Coast Guard Rescue Center in Guam began a search. They had challenges due to weather and availability of resources. So that's when a Navy aircraft stationed in Japan and the Coast Guard ship Oliver Henry then joined the mission. They managed to search an area of more than 78,000 square nautical miles, and the Navy aircraft spotted the trio's palm leaf message the following day. So luckily, they probably weren't stranded there too long to worry about food and water and all that. But yeah, luckily they were saved, and that was a good move on their part.
Mm-hmm.
It probably helps that this is modern day where they probably have enough tech to know where they've searched.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, searching places over and over again, able to more effectively search for these kind of things. So, yeah, great news. And kind of wild that ended up working.
Mm. Yeah. But, yeah, so, and also the other Hero of the Week is the EPA. They have officially put limits on PFAS in drinking water. If you don't remember, those are, forever chemicals.
Yeah. This is their first time setting enforceable limits on PFAS in drinking water, which stands for perfluoral alkyl and perfluoral alkyl substances, a large group of man-made chemicals that have been used since like the 40s to waterproof and stainproof products from clothing, makeup, furniture, cookware, all that kind of stuff, as well as like firefighting foam and semiconductors and all that kind of stuff. But we've found out since then that that stuff comes off after a certain amount of time on a lot of those items that you use, or from people throwing that stuff out, and all that gets into the water supply and tends to lead to a lot of bad stuff. The levels of these chemicals keep building up in our water and our food and our air. And long-term exposure has been linked to serious illnesses, including cancer, liver damage, and high cholesterol. Linked to immune and developmental damage to infants and children as well. So, that's why the EPA has finalized a rule restricting 6 PFAS chemicals in the water individually or in combination with each other or both, meaning water systems are required to monitor for these chemicals and remove them if they're found above allowable levels.
Mm-hmm.
While some states have instituted their own PFAS limits, this is the first time it's happening on a federal level. So they have 5 years to address their PFAS problems, 3 years to sample their systems and establish the existing levels of PFAS, and an additional 2 years to install water treatment technologies if their levels are too high. They expect that excess PFAS levels will be found in around 6 to 10% of water systems.
Mm-hmm.
affecting some 100 million people in the U.S., mm-hmm. which is a lot. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Hopefully that works out.
Yeah, I hope so. But, yeah, so that is the end of the show proper. We now move on to the proper show proper. And the first story for the night is that O.J. Simpson is dead.
Yeah,
good reason. He's dead, dead, dead.
And I don't know if you mentioned the book that he wrote.
Oh, yeah, If I Did It.
Yeah, which part of the civil case against him from the family.
Yeah.
Involved them getting the rights to the book.
Yeah.
And basically they changed the title. They didn't technically change the title. Mm-hmm. They changed the design so that the if is an incredibly small text.
Yeah. Well, no, what they did was that they took the F in the word if, and they took the F and they put it inside of the I. So it looks like I did it.
Well, no, they just took if off of that.
Well, that too.
Yeah, they basically put if inside of the I and I did it. So it looks like, mm-hmm. you know, it says I did it. With some little shit in there. And yeah, mm-hmm. they re-released the book as it says on the cover, I did it. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's exactly what you would expect that family to do. Cause they obviously hate him with everything, that they have. So,
and justifiably so.
Yeah. And so yeah. they made probably a decent chunk of money off of that book as mm-hmm. a result now. So you don't have to worry about, feel like a scumbag buying it, because it's, mm-hmm. it's a very weird thing that happened.
Yep.
That he committed these killings, mm-hmm. wrote a book being like, well, if I did it, this is how I would have done it, and mm-hmm. all this. And it's like, that's a very weird thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's the infamous Bronco chase that was also a very dumb thing to do.
Yep.
You know, unsurprising, he's not a very smart man.
Well, wasn't just a very smart man.
Yeah. But yeah, like even during the trial, the benefited from a lot of mistakes from the LAPD, mm-hmm. As well as, you know, the rest of his legal team, you know, doing a good job of just creating a lot of bullshit to trick the jury and all that. So mm-hmm. yeah, benefited from that. And then, yeah, became a, mm-hmm. a big part of the media. You know, especially like SNL, where Norm Macdonald just took every opportunity possible. You can find mm. the videos of him doing the new segments, mm-hmm. taking every opportunity to be like, to shit on him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the reason he got fired from SNL's, mm-hmm. because, I forget if it was somebody at NBC itself, or if it was just, the people at the top of SNL didn't like him continuing to do it, asked him mm-hmm. not to, and then he did it anyway, and then they fired him.
Yep.
Which didn't, like, kill his popularity or anything, so yeah.
Yep.
He just did it on his own time then.
Yep.
So, yeah. Then he got, when he got out of prison again, a few years ago, he started doing his own social media stuff that was very much weird.
Oh, yeah. Thinking.
Anytime like serial killing stuff happened, he would speak up with his opinions, and everybody's very much like, mm-hmm. who asked you, man? Nobody mm-hmm. wants to hear what you think about this.
Yeah.
But yeah. Good rinse to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, definitely don't need somebody like that around anymore.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, he is dead and in the ground.
Yeah. Right. Nicole Simpson's killer has finally been taken out.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, next story, the other major thing that happened this week, the solar eclipse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it happened I guess it went. Did it go? Well, I mean, it technically went over all of North America. So, you know, we got some of it.
Yeah, we were in the pretty close to the path of totality, I think. Might have been closer to Cleveland, but
yeah,
we had a good time with that, taking a little break mm-hmm. at work and kind of hanging out and watching it happen. And yeah, yeah. it's a wild thing to see because it's probably like a good hour and a half there from like 2 o'clock my time to about 3:30 when it kind of finished up. You know, it's like the sunlight changes from sunlight to moonlight where it's like more white.
Yeah.
More like what you, you know, you see at night.
Yeah.
It got obviously got cooler as you're losing more and more of the sun's direct light on your area. And, you know, you notice that it's darkening. That's kind of, it's a neat thing to be outside and see that kind of just progressively happen. And then, we had glasses to check on it as it went. And once it got really close, it just started getting really dark. Like it was turning into nighttime. And then, you get to see like all the streetlights and such that turn on at night, sort of turned on for a sec for a little bit there for a couple of minutes. And then, you can kind of actually look at the whole thing that's going on because it's the sun's all blocked up. And it's pretty cool. The Given Guardians home opening game was that day, so they had a bunch of stuff there about that.
We did get to experience some of it. Obviously, we weren't near totality, but we did. We were like at I think 70 to 80% or something like that. So it is definitely surreal when it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and suddenly, you know, it looks like it's, you know, 6 or 7. And unfortunately, we didn't have any of those things that would let you look at it. But we did find a neat little trick, which was take a big piece of white paper and a colander, and you just lay them out like the paper on the ground, and then you put the colander over it. And the little holes in the colander, if you look at it, the stage of where the eclipse is, you can see it in the little holes in the calendar. It's neat.
I posted a picture I took in the chat, which was pretty cool. We're not going to get one of these again for I think technically 20 years, so that's going to be in like Montana and the Dakotas, so in the middle of nowhere. And then there's one the following year, and that's going to hit a lot of the South, I think.
Yep.
So that'll be your time, Brandon.
Yep.
21 years. So.
Yep.
Enjoy that.
All right. So next up. So the election is in about 6 or 7 months. Former President Trump and Mike Johnson's big election plan is to stop non-citizens from voting, which is already a thing. It's illegal. It's pretty sure it's always been illegal. I don't know why they think they got to do this now.
Because it's the thing they keep claiming is happening, that Democrats are letting people enter the country so they can have more Democrat voters. And it's like, that's not how that works. Even Elon Musk is pushing this, and AOC responding like, you're literally an immigrant. What the fuck are you talking about here? So they're planning on introducing legislation about this that I don't know what the point of it is. They would implement new citizenship documentation requirements for people to register to vote, which experts have said would make voting harder for many eligible voters like naturalized citizens and young voters. Yeah. The myth that immigrants are exerting undue influence on American elections has been floating around U.S. politics for more than 100 years. Individual states began banning non-citizens from voting more than a century ago, and Congress passed a law in 1996 that explicitly banned the practice in all federal elections.
Yeah.
Numerous studies have also confirmed that it almost never happens, but as more conservative voters say, immigration is a key issue for them. It's become clear that the election misinformation in 2024 will center on that topic as well. And yeah, that's a very nakedly dumb thing that the Republicans are focusing on, because it's what they want their base to be concerned about and say, hey, if you want to stop this, vote for us. And they're not going to stop it because there's nothing to stop. The people that are most illegal in terms of immigration aren't going to risk registering to vote. And So the amount of people that end up trying to is so small, they're not going to affect any election. Mm-hmm. Much like the supposed issues with fraud in voting, which is like, it's single digits in any area at best. And it's mostly been Republicans doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the best you can hope for is have like one extra vote, and very rare do elections hinge on one vote.
Yeah. Yeah. Next up, you may remember that really nasty train derailment that happened in East Palestine, Ohio, sometime back, and all the just fuckery that surrounded it. Well, Norfolk Southern has settled a $600 million lawsuit from the residents in East Palestine. So,
yeah, great. Covers roughly 2,000 of the town's 4,900 residents.
Mm-hmm.
They were forced to evacuate because I think it technically covers, let's see, all class action claims within a 20-mile radius from the derailment. As well as personal injury claims within a 10-mile radius for residents who chose to participate. And yeah, they've already spent more than $800 million on a massive environmental cleanup in East Palestine. So, great for these people.
Seriously.
They get some money. They can potentially move out and go to another town. Hopefully that isn't as close to any sort of train tracks, but
that's
a hard thing to do, especially around here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. But so that happened. And now we have this one. The women's NCAA basketball championship game beat the men's game in the ratings.
Yeah. I think they hit 18.7 million viewers,
mm-hmm.
peaked at a whopping 24 million combined on ESPN and ABC, making the first time in history the women's finals drawn a larger TV audience than the men's. It's also bigger than I think all of the NBA finals games from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Many NFL games, all the MLB games in the World Series,
mm-hmm.
all that. So, yeah. One of the biggest sports events in the last couple of years.
Yep.
So yeah, that's great to see.
Yeah, and that's considering, you know, it's women's basketball, that in and of itself is a massive, massive deal and a major cultural shift, to be honest.
Yeah, though it's kind of mostly centered around Caitlin Clark and her.
Yeah.
Her appearance there, so we'll have to see how it affects things over the next couple of years as she moves to the WNBA, sort of see if there's anybody else in the college game that can draw like her, but
yeah,
I'm sure it'll definitely influence a lot more
mm-hmm.
women to play basketball, so
yeah. All right, well then, and Then NASA has been asked to create a time zone specifically for the moon because we're now wrapping up getting ready to actually do like lunar colonization now. So it's a thing we're considering.
Yeah, something like that. It's a lot more missions to the moon. Mm-hmm. So it's a new lunar time zone called Coordinated Lunar Time.
Yeah.
Is all about ensuring the success of future multinational missions to the moon,
mm-hmm.
Said the executive director of the Center for Air and Space Law at the University of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the U.S. going back to the moon by itself. We are going as the Artemis partners right now, 36 nations.
Mm-hmm.
They are spread out across the globe, so we've got to figure out one way we can talk to everybody in the same time.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not like a regular time zone on Earth. As on Earth, those times are set against Coordinated Universal Time, UTC,
mm-hmm.
which reflects a weighted average measurement of hundreds of extremely precise atomic clocks placed around the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the moon's lower gravity and its motion relative to Earth, moon time passes 56 microseconds faster each day,
mm-hmm.
each Earth day. As a result, an atomic clock on Earth would run at a different rate than an atomic clock on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of standardizing a measurement of time that should help people with doing all their time stuff, because I think that's probably been an issue a bit with some of the landers people try to land on the moon, besides it just being hard in general, but also dealing with time can create issues as well. So
yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh yeah, definitely. And now we're going on to the entertainment portion of the show. There's going to be a live-action film adaptation of the Teenage Mutant story, the Ninja Turtle story, The Last Ronin. This is, of course, on the heels of the fact that there is a video game adaptation in the works as well.
Yeah. But yeah, that's going to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Paramount Pictures is developing it, planning it to be mature, so there's some blood and intense, you know, story stuff going on.
Yep.
Yeah, written by the original Turtles creators Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, with Eastman and Tom Waltz developing the script. Set in a bleak dystopian future in which Oroku Hiroto, the grandson of Shredder, rules New York City as a totalitarian despot. All but one of the Turtles has been killed, as well as their mentor Splinter. The last remaining Turtle seeks revenge by wielding all four of their signature weapons.
Yep.
And yeah, it's be interesting just to see how they do it, because the tech for like rubber suits and such is a lot better these days versus what they had for those original run of movies.
Yeah.
And then all the weird TV show and live stuff they did back after that all looked crummy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's happening. And now for this, Paramount is rebooting the Scary Movie franchise. Why?
Because horror movies are still big, I guess. Like, the first one was still good.
Yes, the first one is actually good. It's actually really funny. It still holds up. The second one, somewhat less so.
Yeah, and then after that, it turned into this cottage industry of parody movies.
Yeah.
That's... was just like, what happened in pop culture in the last year? And then we'll incorporate all of that. And it's like, no, nobody cares. And then that sort of merges into like the Transmorphers stuff and all this, or it's just this thing. It's like, it's great for the actors because they get some work, but none of it's really anything you can be proud of besides getting the paycheck.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hopefully they've actually got some talent on this, I guess. Neil H. Moritz is the producer on this, partnering with Paramount Pictures, who's done a lot of the Fast and Furious stuff. It's going to production this fall, to theaters next year. Yeah, they did five movies, but... ran out of gas. 2013 was the last one. Jeez, that's so much later than I would have thought.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
But they doing that for like 10 years is too much. But yeah, Moritz is currently serving as executive producer on Knuckles, the Knuckles series for Paramount Plus. So he's got some like legit stuff he's been linked to. So. Maybe this will also turn out pretty well. We'll see.
Yep, we'll see. But yeah. Then we also found out another reboot. Heroes is also getting a reboot with its original creator at the helm.
Yeah, they really blew it not having it ready in time for this eclipse here, but
yeah.
I assume they'll probably tie that into it, but yeah, the titled Heroes Eclipsed is set years after the events of the original series, as new evolved humans are discovering their powers. Tim Kring is back, the creator of the original series, which they tried to do not a reboot, but like a follow-up series a few years later. Yeah, Heroes Reborn. They tried to bring some people back. This one might still bring some of those people back, but we'll see. Hey, a more concentrated version of that could be good. Because, yeah, the first season of that is really good. And then the second season's where the big writer strike happened in 2007.
Yeah.
That's just killed this series.
Mm-hmm.
That second season's just, it's not as good as the first.
Mm-mm.
It's not terrible, but it's not what people wanted out of it.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that was one of those series that got real handicapped by that whole mm-hmm. thing. So yeah.
Netflix, going from there, Netflix has a 6-episode comedy series from John Mulaney debuting May 3rd.
Yeah, this looks like it's going to be pretty cool. It's called Everybody's in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
6 episodes featuring field pieces and special guests that will stream live during Netflix's A Joke Comedy Festival.
Mm-hmm.
The show follows Mulaney as he explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it.
Yep.
So that's a pretty good premise.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode will debut on May 3rd, and then new installments airing nightly during the comedy festival May 6th through the 10th. So, that sounds like a pretty good time. So, looking forward to that.
Mm. Alrighty then. And then we also found out, much to our dismay, Max's second season of Velma debuts April 25th.
Yeah. The first season that everybody hate watched and made it do well.
Yeah.
Got him a second season.
Mm-hmm. So
maybe they'll get it better this time.
I doubt it, but
let's see the log line. When an even spookier mystery grips Crystal Cove, Velma must find a way to balance her detective work with the demands of her newfound popularity before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, her faithful friends Daphne, Norville, and Fred are mm-hmm. powerless to help thanks to their own personal battles and worse, detention.
Mm.
So yeah, 10 episodes. Let's see. Yeah, Jane Lynch, Wanda Sykes, Frank Welker, Nicole Byer,
yep. Gary
Cole, some good voice actors for the new season. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, we'll see how that goes.
All right. On top of that, Apple also renewed Monarch Legacy of the Monsters for a second season, along with plans for a spinoff series.
Yeah, they're planning to do multiple spinoffs, I think.
Mm.
More of this kind of focus on the human stuff with all the Godzilla stuff going on. So
mm-hmm.
the thing got pretty good word of mouth on it. So hopefully they kind of keep that good stuff going and make some more cool stuff. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Would be interesting for them to delve into maybe things going on around some of the other, I forget what they call them, not tyrants, but the other kaiju that are hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see some of them at the end of King of the Monsters, and
yeah,
there's a lot of cool ones, and it would be nice to see more of them.
Mm.
So yeah,
there yeah. Oh man. And then on top of that, we got a teaser trailer for Joker Folie à Deux, which of course is the sequel to the last Joker movie, and is going to, I believe this is the one that introduces Harley Quinn into the mix.
Yeah. Which at least as far as this seemed to suggest that she is also an inmate at the mm-hmm. Arkham Asylum that Harvey goes into. I forget what the Arthur's the guy's name, the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this trailer is very weird. It's mm-hmm. supposed to be more of a musical.
Mm-hmm.
And so they definitely do a bit of that in here.
Yep.
But not very much of it. So it's mm-hmm. kind of hard to understand how they're going to fit all that in to a cohesive story.
Yeah.
So it seems like this could be the one that's kind of just a mess.
Mm-hmm.
As they kind of sniff their farts too much.
Maybe. We'll see.
There's a weird bit at this where Harley draws with her lipstick like a, you know, Joker smile, and he moves his face to over it, and it's a very weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
To which somebody took the I think you should leave bit with the crooner.
mm-hmm.
with the hat and the cigar, and put that on there as well. So that's a fun mm-hmm. thing. So yeah, that's out later this year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know that I'll check it out, but that's out October 4th.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to see what other trailers seem to show with this one.
Yep. And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Fly Me to the Moon.
Yeah, this looks actually pretty cool. It is like a comedic rom-com that features Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
As Channing Tatum is working at NASA as they're about to launch the historic Apollo 11
mm-hmm.
Mission, and Scarlett Johansson ends up getting hired as a, you know, to work on NASA's public image
mm-hmm.
as, you know, things are going wrong and all that. So it ends up in this weird thing where they're trying to film the moon landing as like a backup for in case things go wrong
mm.
or whatever. And it leads to all this weird stuff.
Yep.
But it looks like it could be pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be out in July, I think.
Mm.
So yeah, that's, it looks pretty fun.
Yeah. It actually does look pretty fun. It looks very nice too.
Yeah, from Greg Berlanti, who's done a lot of good stuff. So,
all right, definitely. And with that, I do believe we have got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We've got ourselves a show. So, I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link to you on the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or anywhere else that you can think of as a podcast aggregator. And if we're not on there, just give it a moment. We'll be on there as soon as we find out it's there. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thank you very much, Chris, for joining me again on this. If you like what you've heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your coworkers, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everywhere in between. Because, you know, they may hate you, but they may like us. And yeah, so join us again next week where maybe another awful human being will die. And we won't have to weep for humanity because it seems balance may have somewhat been restored to the universe. But I always jinx it. So, yeah. Just, I'm expecting worse next week. But yeah, good night, everybody.